Hello and welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldick, an inspirational and informative half hour of insight into the heart of Scripture. In addition to teaching the Bible, Les is a full-time rancher, having a down-to-earth practical teaching style that makes the Bible come to life. All programs are available on audio tape, videotape, and in printed form. At the end of the program, there will be an address where you can contact the ministry. And now, here's Les Feldick with today's lesson.
I do appreciate some confirmation of what we're doing. I'm human. And it does help to know that people are getting interested in the Word. And like I said, I think before, whole families are coming to know the Lord, the father, the mother, the teenage kids. And it's so rewarding, and we just want to thank you for making it possible. All right, we're going to continue right on where we left off in the letter by James to the Hebrew believers, to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. So we know that those had to be Jews of the dispersion. Now, we got to remember, where did they all come from? Well, first and foremost, in fact, let's just go back. Oh, yeah, book 54. One for my little wife, I'd forget in my head. This is first four programs of book number 54. Let's go back before we go any further so that you constantly are aware, who are these people that these little epistles are addressed to? James and Peter and John and Jude, and to a degree even the whole book of Revelation, even though, like I said in the last part of the program, we are now 2,000 years later, but full circle back as it was when these epistles were written. And there will be Jewish believers going into the tribulation and looking for the second coming now as they were back then. But come back with me first a minute to Acts chapter 11, because this is probably the best way to understand why does James, as well as the other two or three, why do they address Jews? Why aren't they including Gentiles? Well, Acts 11:19, I think, says it. Acts 11, verse 19. Now, you want to remember that Israel has been out there as a people scattered throughout the then known world ever since the Babylonian invasion in 606 B.C. But then when Saul came on the scene and just persecuted unmercifully the Jewish church in Jerusalem, they had to scatter for their life, and Acts 8:1 records that, except the apostles. They didn't leave because they were sure that the Messiah would be coming, and they didn't want to be out of town when it happened. But the rest of them scattered. All right, now you pick those up then in Acts 11:19. And this is so simple. My, you don't have to be a seminary graduate to understand this. Now, they who were scattered abroad upon the persecution that arose about Stephen. Now, you know, that was back there at Jerusalem. And they traveled as far as Phoenix and Cyprus and Antioch. In other words, that whole eastern end of the Mediterranean, preaching the word to none but Jew only. That's what the book says. That these Jewish believers that were now scattered away from the home church in Jerusalem, which was headed up, of course, by Peter and the 12, are now being scattered throughout that end of the Roman Empire, and they still have no consort with anybody but Jews. All right, now let's come back to James, and for those of you who have just joined us in the last week or two, and every day we have new ones, stop with James chapter 1. Verse 1. James 1, verse 1. And this just says it all, plain English. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to, and I don't think we do any harm by putting writing in there, writing to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. Now, isn't that plain? Now, these Jews, of course, gathered in little congregations of synagogues, and they know nothing of Paul's work of grace. They're still in Judaism. All they've understood is that Jesus Christ of Nazareth was the Messiah, and to a degree that he had been risen from the dead and that he was still able to fulfill the covenant promises of the kingdom. And so this is what they're looking for. All right, so now then back to James chapter 4, where we left off in our last lesson, verse 12. And always watch the language, like I said before, how it's so much like the language of the four Gospels concerning Jesus and the law and all the rest. Verse 12. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. In other words, God is going to fulfill two purposes. Now, come back with me a few pages to Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7, verse 25. This is just one example. And that's all we're going to use. How that God is able to work both sides. Hebrews 7, verse 25, here's the saving side. Wherefore he is able also to save them to the uttermost. Who? Those that come unto God by him, that is, by Jesus Christ. Those who come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them, that is, those who have come to Christ. All right, now let's look at the other side of the coin. Not very pretty. Very seldom do you hear it anymore, and that's Revelation 20. Revelation 20, the great white throne judgment. And these are the two concepts that James is putting in front of his people. They're dealing with a God who is able to save, but he's also able to condemn to their doom. Now, how many times haven't you heard it? How can a God of love send anybody to such an awful place? Well, we know what the answer is. He did everything that needed to be done when he suffered the horrible death of the cross. And that was for all mankind. And no strings attached. All they have to do is believe it. And when they spurn that, then he has every right to say, depart from me, I never knew you. Because he's done all he can do. All right, so now then in Revelation 20, you do have the ability and the wherewithal of God to destroy those who are lost. All right, verse 11. Revelation 20. This is the end of everything. This is the final act of God on the human race. And I saw a great white throne, and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heavens fled away. There was found no place for them. And I saw the dead. Now remember, there's no believers involved in here. This is all the unbelieving from Cain to the end. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, the righteous judge. And the books, plural, were opened. And another book opened, which is the book of life. And when their name was not in the book of life, then he opens up the books, which included their works. That's what Paul calls fruit unto death. They lived a life of sin and rebellion, which was a life of fruit unto death. And here it comes. And so he opened those things which were written in the books according to their works. The sea gave up the dead which were in it. Death and hell delivered up the dead. In other words, all the lost of the ages, from wherever they are, will come forth. And remember, Jesus said in John chapter 5 that everybody that ever lived will be resurrected. Those who have been faith to a resurrection of life, and the rest to a resurrection of condemnation. Well, this is the condemnation. All right? And so they were judged. Every man, individually, the billions of them. Now, you know, this throws a curve at us, doesn't it? I mean, after all, we're human. How in the world will God have time to bring every individual lost person before the bar of justice? Well, we can't comprehend it, but you got to remember, we're not in time here, we're in eternity. And when you get out of time and into eternity, it's a whole different ballgame. And things can happen that, well, like I read years and years ago, maybe science has changed it now, but I remember one hypothesis that if a human being could go through a black hole and down through a white hole, he could usurp a million years of time in 10 minutes. Well, see, that's beyond us. Well, it's the same way here. God will judge the billions of the human race in what we would call a matter of minutes. And yet everyone's going to have a time before him. Don't ever doubt it, because we're not in time here, we're in eternity. All right? Now then, verse 14. See what James means when he says that God is able to save and to destroy? All right? And death and hell, that is the compilation of all the lost of the ages, were cast into the lake of fire. Now, people don't want to hear that anymore. I can't help it. It's in the book. And this is the second death. Physical was their first death, and now the spiritual is their second death. And then verse 15 puts the cap on it. Whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And don't think for a minute that that's an instant annihilation, because while you're here in chapter 20, come back to verse 10. And it shows that it's an ongoing thing. And when the Lord himself said it'll be there forever and ever and ever for all eternity, they're not going to end. It's going to be forever, just like our life is going to go on forever. All right, verse 10 of Revelation 20, the devil that deceived them, that is at the end of the kingdom economy now, when we're ready to go into eternity, the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast, or the Antichrist, and the false prophet, the two men of the seven-year tribulation period. And so the lake of fire and brimstone, where the Antichrist and the false prophet are. How long have they already been there? 1,000 years. And they're still there. They haven't been annihilated. They haven't been burned up. They're still there. And so they'll be tormented day and night, forever and ever. Now this just epitomizes again the grace of God. How that Christ and the work of the cross made it possible for every one of these people to miss that kind of an eternity. And that's why a God of love can do it. They've spurned his love, and they have rejected his offer of salvation. And so, yes, James says it again. Verse 12 of chapter 4. Back to James 4. And again, keep this in mind. There is one lawgiver. There is one eternal God. And he alone is able to save and to destroy. So then James says, so who are you that you should judge another? Now, like I told in the last half program, that doesn't mean you don't make discernment between the lifestyle of the lost person and a believer. We have that right. We have that ability according to Scripture. But we cannot judge who's going to be in eternal doom or who's going to be in heaven. You can't look on the heart. None of us can. Okay, now verse 13, he shifts gears again and he goes into something totally different. Now go to you that say, today or tomorrow we will go into a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Oh boy, now what does that tell you? First and foremost, before you get any further, come back with me to Luke chapter 21. Thought it was in Luke 21. Maybe I've got to go to another one. Maybe I better go back to Matthew 24, honey. Yeah, let's go back to Matthew 24. It's in Luke someplace, but I'm missing it. Luke 24. Okay. Matthew 20. Did I say Luke again? Matthew 24, verse 37. Matthew 24, verse 37. Now remember, the Lord himself is not betraying the secret that time is going to be interrupted and that these people to whom he's speaking will not see the tribulation and the second coming. He doesn't betray that. He could have. As God, he knew the day and the hour and all that. But the scenario was just the same, as I've been repeating now for the last several programs. The scenario was exactly the same for these Jewish people approaching the tribulation and the second coming and the kingdom, as it will be for Jews in this present time, which we think is getting close, when they too will be faced the same thing. But the scenario is going to be the same as it was then, and so is it now. And here it is. Verse 37, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall also be the coming of the Son of Man. In other words, when the tribulation has run its course. Verse 38, for as in the days before the flood, just like these days that these Jews that James is writing to are facing the tribulation, as the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. See? Life was going on. And then he comes down a little further, two in the field. Well, what doing? Laboring, working, harvesting. See? All right, that's sufficient, I think. Now if you can come back to James again, this is the same scenario. That as the tribulation is approaching and they're going to be coming under pressure, the believers, yet you have that element of either unbelievers or carnal believers, whatever case James is dealing with, all they got on their mind is what? Material gain. Hey, they're in business. And they're not too concerned about the spiritual. Well, it's going to be the same way now. As we're approaching the end time, the whole world is all wrapped up in materialism. They don't think of the spirit. All they're thinking is how they can make money in the stock market or how they can do this and that and everything. Well, it's the same way here. And so James says, now be careful. You that say today or tomorrow we'll go and do such and such a thing and we'll buy and sell and get gain. See? That was the typical activity. All right, verse 14. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor, like your breath on a 20 below zero day. You don't know what that is down here in Oklahoma, but I do. Oh, my goodness, that breath will just disappear. Well, that's life. Peter uses the example of a blade of grass that comes up in the morning. You clip it off in the afternoon. That's life. It's only so temporary, see? All right? So he says, you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and vanish away. You know, I read a book years and years ago that made it even more graphic. Snowflakes on the River. And I love that. Can you just see big, huge snowflakes coming down on a large river? How long does it last? Poof. It's gone. That's life. Just like a snowflake on the river. Just like a blade of grass that's sprung up and clipped off. Oh, even some may live to be 90, 95, 100 years old. I've had a few people in my classes. 100, 102. But you know what they tell me? It went just as fast as you and I think it has up as old as we are. That extra 30, 40 years goes just as fast as the rest of it. Bingo, and it's all gone. And compared to eternity, it's nothing, see? All right, so James is reminding his people, don't get so concerned about the material, because it's just here today and gone tomorrow. Verse 15, for that you ought to say, if the Lord will. And I think that's appropriate. That's what we can do today. Well, if the Lord willing, this is what we're going to do, see? So, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or do that. Very appropriate. Remember I told you when we first started, there was going to be tidbits here that you can apply today. Just like you can go into the gospel accounts and you can make applications. But you're not going to find the plan of salvation in the book of James. It's not in here. Alright? Verse 16. But now you rejoice in your boastings. Now, I'm going to give the Jewish people credit. I'm not doing this critically. I think they are to be admired. They have a knack for being successful. Don't they? Absolutely. I think it's part of their covenant relationship. They have a knack for being successful, whether it's in literature or art or music or medicine, you name it, and Jewish people are successful. And business. Well, evidently the same way here. Some of these Jews, in spite of the pressures from the Roman Empire and so forth, they were materially successful. But it's also a well-known fact that there is not a group of people on earth that are so philanthropically minded. I hope I got that word out right. They're great philanthropists. They give, give, give. See? And so this is part and parcel, I think, of their makeup. And so verse 16 just hits it right on the head. Now you rejoice in your boastings over their what? Their success. They are naturally successful people. But he says that kind of rejoicing is evil. Don't rejoice in the things of the flesh and the material. Now verse 17, maybe this is why they are so prone to being philanthropic. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and to do it not, to him it is what? Sin. And they were aware of that. And so they overcame some of their materialism with giving and hoping, I guess, by that to merit favor with God or whatever. All right, now lest you think I've been pushing the envelope on this, look at the first verse of chapter 5. Now remember, we're back in about the 50s, maybe 60 A.D. I think in the 50s. 50 A.D. 15 or 20 years from now, their temple's going to be destroyed and Jerusalem and Israel's going to be scattered. But it hadn't happened yet. And here they are. He says, go to now, ye... What kind of men? Rich. See? These Jews, a lot of them had wealth. He says, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. When? When the tribulation would hit. See? When the tribulation would hit and all of their wealth and materialism would be wiped out. Now, you know it's coming, not only just for Israel and the Jews, but for the whole human race. The wrath of God is coming, just like James could see it coming in their day, and that all their wealth and materialism would amount to nothing, because it's all going to be wiped away. Well, it's been a long time since I've done this, but let's go back to Jeremiah, just for example. And I do this to sober people. Because even we as believers are so prone to get wrapped up in all the trappings of this world and our economy and everything that pertains to it. And we forget. God's wrath is coming. I'm not saying it's going to be next year or the following, but we're getting closer and closer. You know, I've always referred to the cartoon of the old boy sitting in his cave door, and over the door was... the end is near, but then he ended, or added, ER, which meant that every day the end is nearer. And that's where we are. The end is getting nearer every day. All right, got a couple minutes left. Jeremiah, chapter 25. And let's drop down to verse 30. Now, this isn't pleasant reading. This is horrifying. But it's coming. And James could see it coming in their day. They thought it was just over the horizon. And then God, as I'm going to show you in the next program, interrupted that time span and gave us the age of grace. And all these things are now future from our point in time. All right, Jeremiah 25, and let's just start at verse 30, honey. Therefore, prophesy thou against them all these words, and say unto them, the Lord. See? That's Christ in the Old Testament. The Lord shall roar from on high and utter his voice from his holy habitation. He shall mightily roar upon his habitation, that is, this old world. He shall give a shout as they that tread the grapes against all the inhabitants of the earth, not just Israel. Every human being is going to come under this. Verse 31, a noise shall come even to the ends of the earth, for the Lord has a controversy with the nations, not just Israel, all of them. He will plead with all flesh. He will give them that are wicked to the sword, death, saith the Lord. Now verse 32, thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, evil shall go forth from nation to nation. Does that ring a bell? Yeah, we're hearing about evil today, like not a long time. All right, evil shall go forth from nation to nation. A great whirlwind shall be raised up from the borders of the earth. Now, we're hearing more and more. In fact, I think I mentioned in my last newsletter, the next most used acronym will be what? WMD. You're going to see it in every article you read. WMD. What is it? Weapons of mass destruction. And the whole world is interested in them. Not just Iraq. Everybody wants weapons of mass destruction. All the nations of the world are clamoring for more military hardware. Well, what weapon of mass destruction causes tremendous wind? Nuclear explosion. Tremendous wind. And so I can just see all the nuclear forces of the world will come to bear in these final days of the tribulation. So a great whirlwind shall be raised up from the borders of the earth. Now, as a result of all of these nukes being unloaded, first after one after the other, verse 33, the slain of the Lord shall be at that day from one end of the earth even to the other. They shall not be lamented, nor gathered, nor buried. There'll be so many that nobody can bury them fast enough. There'll be no funeral parlors capitalizing on all this. But they shall be as dung on the ground. That's what's coming. That's why all the world is interested now in weapons of mass destruction. It's going to come.
Thank you for joining us again for Through the Bible with Les Feldick. If you'd like to order audio tapes, videos, or any of our printed material, you may do so by writing Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. That's Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or you can call us toll-free if you'd like at 1-800-369-7856. That's 1-800-369-7856. Remember, this is a faith ministry, and your participation with us is greatly appreciated. Again, our address is Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. And our phone is 1-800-369-7856. Thanks again for listening, and please join us next time for Through the Bible with Les Feldick.